Blog Talk Radio.
Talk. My name is Jason McKean. This is a show about accessing your inner wizard and aligning yourself to the magic of creation and moving yourself forward and on into the future. Welcome. Welcome. Thank you for listening to Wizard Talk today. Today is the end of August. Is it the end? It's the 30th. Maybe there's 31 days. I always forget about August. If it's 30 or 31 days. It's my niece's birthday today. Happy birthday, Brianna. I do know that. That's one thing that I know as a wizard and as an uncle. Uncle Wizard. All right. What do I have in store today? Oh, yes, the episode of The Good, The Bad, and The... wah, wah, wah. It's a episode that I don't know if I've touched upon it before. Maybe I have, but I don't think so. As far as looking at the good aspects of cards, the bad aspects, these are all in air quotes as far as... you know, that's it's energetically speaking, we're looking at that which is in relationship to the Querent. You know, but looking at dualities, you know, looking at energy that, you know, if you get a card, it doesn't automatically assume that it's the greatest thing or the end of the world. And because the tarot has so many levels to it, it's important to look at it in a way that you know, allows for the reader to have their say, for the energy of the Querent to obviously you know, come to play, and the cards themselves that come up. And when one reads intuitively, then you know, it's kind of the difference between just reading in a way that you know, there's ways to read them where there's reversals, you know, cards that are upside down that have a different meaning, and sometimes that can be worse. Sometimes they just be a little bit different as far as the flow of the energy of that card. But you know, the way I read, and a lot of my colleagues as well, they'll tap into the energy of the Querent, and they'll see the energy of a card that comes up, and not get like too textbook about it, you know, where it's like, oh well, that absolutely means this. It's a starting point, you know. The card wouldn't come up otherwise. It's a starting point. I always feel it's a starting point for exploration. You know, conversation, the back and forth, if that's, you know, what occurs. Not every Querent is chatty. You know, they just want to sit back and listen. But you know, it's like the however one is engaged in the readings and all. That's usually just either a personal thing, or you know, just the individual's personality coming up, just wanting to have something to say without you know, just filling up the time with, you know, their talk. Obviously they're there to listen to you talk as well, but you know, sometimes it is a counseling session, and it does require that the Querent show up in looking at their issues and seeing how they can move forward in positive ways. Damn, I always do this. It's like, you know, I'm getting into the meat of it, and I just want to announce my my website and any other events that are coming up before I get into the main topic there. My website, Jason D. McKean, JasonDMckean.com, and it has my tarot reading schedule in Los Angeles, and also my Om CDs, the Om Chant CDs that are played about the world. Last week, and I'm saying this because in October we're going to do another teepee experience in Agora Hills in the evening. That will be October 16th. That's a Tuesday night. It's a school night, everyone. So, but it only goes till 10 o'clock. So 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. You have plenty of time to get there. And then, you know, we do the readings, the individual readings in the group setting. But it's a very powerful evening for those of you who have gone and those of you who would like to go. It's in Agora, which is, where's Agora? Thousand Oaks. It's like there's the San Fernando Valley, and then you go on the 101 and a little bit above and beyond it, but not quite towards, if you reach Ventura, you've gone too far. Agora Hills is still quite a ways back there, kind of in between the valley and where it starts to get into that Ventura-ish area. And, you know, last week we did that on the Thursday night, and it was really great. We focused on healing and rejuvenation, and the group there, that they were awesome. They were open. They were supportive. You know, and the vast majority of people that come are strangers. They don't know me. They don't know anyone else in the group. And by the end of it, it's like, you know, people are connecting, and you know, they feel, you know, less alone in the world, I think. I mean, that's part of it too. And you know, the energy of working with groups is pretty it's pretty amazing. It's fun, you know. I mean, I have a lot of fun. I the more that I read tarot, it's like you know, there are no strangers in the world. You know, everyone is just like a friend in waiting. And I'm blessed to have discovered this later in life, you know, because I was someone who would be okay with just working on their own, locked away in the laboratory, mad scientist me. No, I'm not a mad scientist. Yes, I was. I was like a complete like art and music guy, and I would like. I think one album I spent making, it took 5 years. 5 years. And, you know, that's just that's just too much to lock yourself away, you know, for 5 years. You know, the movie I made took 3 years. It's like, oh my God, get a life, man. And so, you know, this is definitely, I love the social aspects and the healing aspects. You know, it's like I feel that I'm healing as much as the people that I talk to and who are on that course of expanding their life, of being in a place of, you know, wanting to you know, be out there in the world. Be effective in the world. All right. So anyway, teepee experience. That was really, really fun. And so the next one will be October 16th, and again, it's on a Tuesday night in Agora Hills. Other than that, I'm not sure if I have anything else other than my Green Man reading schedule in North Hollywood, NoHo, on Sundays and Tuesdays, and then Kathmandu Boutique in Santa Monica on Wednesdays from 3 to 7. So it's like late afternoon there. All right, to talk again about, to get back to this, the good, the bad, and the dot, dot, dot. Are there ugly tarot cards? No. Well, we'll talk about some that potentially are, but to be in a place of where you're intuitively reading the cards, and you know, I read in sets of three. It feels like there's a really good, well-rounded look. You know, when those three cards come up, you know, as opposed to reading the more traditional Celtic cross and other spreads that are really great for a specific event, or you know, looking at someone's relation to an event coming up. It's like the three card, that's like all purpose. You can, you know, start with the three, and then, you know, maybe that leads to another question, and you add another three cards. Does it have to always be three? No, it can be one card, it can be four cards. But three is just a really nice, again, kind of a well-rounded, energetic feel for it. And like yesterday, I was reading two friends, and both people were in the room, and I had the friend pull cards too for the person that was being read, because I feel that, you know, energy, it doesn't lie, for one. And it's you know, we can see how our own energy, how that can be a part of someone else's journey, and you know, how it speaks. You know, once we pull something, and then, you know, we start talking about it, it's like we can see how we're all connected. And you know, it's something I do in workshops. It's something I do in the teepee, certainly. But it's also, you know, it's there to allow for people to expand their own experience of spirit and how they connect, how they allow themselves to connect. You know, how we give ourselves permission to connect to spirit. I'm all about that. I'm all about how we allow ourselves to, you know, see our part, see others' parts, and see where it's all kind of interwoven. It's pretty, I don't want to say mind blowing, but it's can be, you know. It depends on the circumstances. To start off. Because I pulled just a number of cards, just because they have different qualities. There are certain cards that are that have a similar frame of reference, but I just wanted to get kind of an overall feel for this episode. And of course, the Sun and the Moon cards, they're ones that they have like very specific connotations when they're pulled, and yet, you know, they too can show like this light and this dark side of human expression, of human perception. It's like the Sun card, for instance. I usually preface it, because it is an amazing card, I usually preface it with, you know, it being like one of the most beautiful cards in the deck, because it is. Certainly in the Wizard's Tarot, it's like, you know, it's a really beautiful card. And it's a card of joy, you know, and it's a card of where I feel that with the aspect of the sunlight, it's like the sunlight comes in and it just fills up the space with light. And with that light, it's like we can see everything. We can see everything that's in front of us. And it doesn't leave a lot of question marks, as opposed to when we're in the dark about something, where it's like, it's like we don't know. I don't know. And we can worry about stuff. It's like when something is known, then we can see it and face it and incorporate it and be move within it, navigate it a little bit easier. The Hebrew on both of these cards, the sun and the moon, it's like the Hebrew resh is the face on the sun. The Hebrew on the moon is quaff, which is the back of the head. So on the sun you have the face, and then you have the back of the head on the moon, which is, it symbolizes the hidden, that which we can't see, which isn't real available to us. So, we're looking at the sun card, which on the surface of it, joy, truth, being able to look at that which is right in front of us and then how we face it. There is a darker aspect though of that in personality wise, which is the aspect of narcissism, of being self-centered, because the sun is the center of the solar system. And when someone has a personality type where they feel that everything revolves around them, then that can be a tricky realm to navigate. And does it show up for the querents a lot? I would say a lot of times it shows up as someone that is in their world that they have problems with. That it hasn't been so much their particular quality. There have been exceptions, a couple exceptions, but for the most part, I've seen it as someone who's been in their orbit that just takes up, that sucks up like all the energy there. They don't allow for this person to express themselves freely or to be in a place of where they have a voice. And so, that is a kind of a dark aspect of that. The moon card, has all this intuitive energy, all this the moon energy is like the emotional self. It has a deep well of this energy that's kind of below the surface that we can tap into, and we can feel a situation. It's just as important. The more negative aspects of it, those qualities of it can also be a card of where the rhyme or reason or the logic of things can get pretty twisted, and an expression can come out kind of crazy. It's like the root word luna is also the root word for lunatic. When there's like no basis in logic or a known truth, a truth that's outside of us. It's like an inner, like being caught in an inner world. And if we're in too deep, it's like that's where it can get tricky. Interestingly enough, it's like the high priestess is usually shown with the moon. In the Rider-Waite, she has the moon on under her foot. It's almost like she's looking to control that lunar aspect. It's like, yes, one is highly intuitive, one is utilizing those senses, but always tempering it with the energy of like the mind, the higher self, and not just, you know, diving into the moon energy and just counting on that. It's like it's the one who has a deep awareness, a deep awareness of how to not control. I have a problem with that word, but to navigate that realm and survive it for one, survive it and make use of it. So both the sun and the moon, you know, very positive cards in some sense, and also tricky ones too. Another pairing in the major arcana, the Emperor and the Empress. It's like the Emperor is the builder, is the one who manifests dreams. The Empress is like the dreamer of dreams. She's the creative source. She's the mother that gives birth to you know, those dreams, and allows for them to be created. It's like if one looks at it in one way, it's like the Emperor builds a house and the Empress makes it a home. So that male and female energy combined to create life, you know, to have structure, but to have the spirit that inhabits the structure, so that life continues. Life wants to continue. So what are the negatives? Because that sounded pretty good. What are the negatives of those cards? It's like if we're looking at actual like parents, it's like the Emperor can be a very cold-hearted guy. He can be a guy who provides, yes, but doesn't allow any feeling to come forth. And the mother, the Empress, she can be the mother that smothers, the smothering mother. And you know, where it's like there's too much instruction, too watchful, too much, like, you know, whereas the Emperor might not pay that much attention. It's like the Empress pays too much attention. And I don't mean when we're 2 years old. You know, it's like when we're 20 or 40 or 60, and they're still like, you know, being themselves. If my own mother's listening to this program, it's like, it's not you. It's like she made me cookies for my last birthday. So love you, Mom. Love you, Mutti. All right. Let's see. I've got some others, of course, that I've pulled. I don't know I have any pairings, because I was just trying to get, like, again, kind of like different aspects of the good and bad. But the Tower card, it's like most people like shudder when they get that in their reading. It's like, what did I do wrong? You know, what's going to happen? It's going to go wrong. You know, the tower, as far as the negative aspects of it, it's like an event that's usually instantaneous that just blows the lid off everything as far as it really shakes you up. You know, it can be a lightning strike that allows for a destruction to take place. It can be an earthquake, you know, that just takes everything and just shakes the hell out of it. And in our personal lives, you know, it can be, you know, something that is revealed that it's like it uncovers something that's happening, you know, with our mate or at work or something that, you know, just changes things up dramatically so that we're now having to recalibrate. And instead of like that confidence that we had that was built on not so sturdy premises, truths, it's like, you know, those fall aside, and then we have to start building from the bottom again, but you know, utilizing the truth. On the good side of it, it can represent an idea that you know, maybe you've been looking for a solution for a problem or an issue that you have. It's like it's again kind of that lightning bolt of, you know, the light bulb that goes on inside your head that says, oh, okay, I get it. And you're ready to you know, go off in a new direction, you know, based on this new enlightened perspective, you know. So there is the positive in that. In the Wizard's Tarot, it's like the tower is sturdy. There is lightning that's coming out of the sky and hitting or surrounding it. There are waves that are crashing around it. It's almost like a lighthouse. And there is an individual who is at the top, but he is safe. You know, they are intact, and you know, it can indicate where one is in the eye of the storm. One is in a calm, secure place while there's drama that goes on around them. And, you know, we all know family and friends and events that take place that invite us to get sucked into their drama, you know, of what's going on. You know, it's like many, many friends, you know, who like say, you know, well, this just happened to me. And it's like, I want you to get as upset as me. And yeah, you know, it's like, you know, my friend was making a turn in his car into a parking lot. And I think he was like, it was kind of a last minute turn, last second decision, and so he was kind of a little bit in the other lane, and someone took it upon themselves to throw a drink at his car, and that upset him and all, and he was telling me about it, and I was getting upset. I was like, well, let's go, you know, find this person and confront him and all that, throw a drink at their car, you know. I feel like, you know, 50-year-old men like throwing drinks at cars. But it's like, wait a sec, that's a $5 latte. I'll just throw the cup, the empty cup. I don't know. I just don't see it. But, you know, getting sucked into the drama of this stuff, you know. I remember like cruising the strip like as a teenager, late teenager, and just like, you know, words being exchanged between couples and all that, and it's just like, yeah, kick his ass, you know, it's all this stuff, you know, it's just getting sucked into drama. Anyway, I don't know, that was fun. It's kind of going down memory lane there, cruising the strip. Let's see what else I got here. Well, you know, I pulled a couple of the court cards in the cups section, the Queen of Cups, the Knight of Cups. Queen of Cups, incredibly sensitive. You know, the sensitivity is, you know, for me, it's like on par with the High Priestess, maybe not as honed, not as practiced as the High Priestess, because the High Priestess got it going. But the Queen of Cups, she can still get sucked under as far as you know, that sensitivity. It's like a two-edged sword, can be, where you know, it's like we're able to experience, you know, other people's joy, suffering, be able to relate to them, be very empathic. You know, you learn a lot of stuff, and you know, you can synthesize it too into an art form, to music, into writing, into painting, sculpture, however, dentistry, maybe not so much. No, not saying that can't be creative as a dentist. But the High Priestess, you know, takes that sensitivity and can work it to a creative expression. And yet, like the darker aspect, the bad aspect of that is, you know, what we put out into the world, what we share with the world, if it's not received so well, if there's criticism, constructive or otherwise, it can lend the person to want to withdraw, to lock the doors and just hide away, and just kind of, you know, sit there with their wounds. And it's just like, okay, you know, that's where it can get to be much. And you know, when this card comes up in a reading, the Queen of Cups, it's like it does show a tendency for someone to, you know, get hurt by criticism, or you know, not feel that they're being understood, and it's hurtful, you know, it hurts them to you know, be in that position, but they also wouldn't, you know, have that deep sensitivity, you know, to create and to feel, you know, if they didn't have that. So it's like kind of a give and take situation, but it's important to know about oneself, especially if they're really creative. The Knight of Cups, that is like a lighter energy, a lighter social energy. It's like the someone who can go into a party and just light up the room, and you know, make instant friends. And kind of turn on a magnet within. You know, it's called charisma, right? But it's like an ability to have people become attracted to your energy. You know, because there's a lightness about it. And not a desperation. You know, it's like, will you be my friend? Please be my friend. You know, is that appealing when someone does that. If someone does that, it's like not as much. Not as much. I would probably say no. It's not appealing at all. But when someone is effortless in, you know, how they conduct themselves around you, it can be charming. And it's like I want to be around that. I want more of that. I want to cultivate that, you know, for myself too. So what could possibly be bad about the Knight of Cups? There's a certain depth that, like an immaturity about the card, where, you know, there can be a shallowness to it, and one that what is it that someone said the other day about, you know, people who live in California, they have like the California promise. It's like, oh yeah, we should get together, you know, sometime. It's like, you know, for those friends that we meet up with at some other, you know, maybe we see them out in the world somewhere, and it's like, yeah, we should get together again. And it's like it's sincere in the moment. It's sincere in the moment, the California promise, but it usually doesn't happen. As far as you know, I don't know if it's because life is just too busy out here, people have to make a living, or if it's just, you know, everyone wants to be agreeable rather than say, no, we are never going to get together again. It's like, you know, that'd be a little harsh. It's like, you know, you would want to live maybe somewhere else to be that honest with people. But the California promise of, you know, hey, we're going to get together. You know, it's like the Knight of Cups is kind of representative of that lightness that can also be shallow, that doesn't have the gravitas behind it to connect and keep the connection solid. It's there to open. I guess the Knight of Cups is an opener, but not a closer. That's another way of looking at it. That can be kind of the negative connotation there. You know, this one's pretty interesting. The Four of Pentacles. You know, because I see the Four of Pentacles as a card of alignment, where one has a pentacle on their head or at their head, and then one at their heart, and then two at their feet, and they're sitting there, and again, for me, it's one of alignment, where one has their head and heart in the same place, so that their feet can go in a focused direction, rather than, you know, your head wanting to go one direction, your heart wanting to go the opposite direction, and you trying to, you know, move forward in an effective way, and you're battling yourself. That's like, that doesn't work. You know, usually come up with real half-assed scenarios that you're creating because your own alignment is off. And so I like to see that card in that light, and especially to help people get their heads on straight. And for me, that's like a good interpretation. You know, it's like where someone is solid. And the fours, they represent that solidity as well. You know, four legs on a chair, four legs on a table, four walls to a room. That idea of the four allowing for solidity. However, It's like the four also represents the miser, someone who holds their wealth too tight to them and doesn't allow for the continued flow of like monetary energy. It's like the person who sits on their wealth and doesn't invest or buy anything that they would enjoy or that they would like to have for themselves is just a good thing. It's just like, no, I can't buy that for myself. I have to hold on to my money. It's like, but you would like that. You would enjoy that. It's like, no. Now is not the time. So this energy of being the miser, of holding too tightly, and wealth is energy. Money is energy. It's something that has I don't know that it has any value of its own other than what is given to it. You know, our money is just paper, or it's you know, we find we're doing all this online banking and paying for stuff that is it's just like a credit system almost. You know, it's like a, you know, the numbers and all, it becomes a numbers game. And you know, so that there isn't anything that is of substance anymore to money, you know, other than what it can purchase, right? Whether that's physical goods, or if it's time, you know, if it's a vacation, or you know, some kind of service. That's what we look to use it for. But you know, what exactly are we holding on to? In some instances, that energy is very apparent, as far as the person who holds on, you know, too much. Speaking of holding on, I've got a couple of swords here. I like the swords because they're very dramatic cards, very very dramatic looking and all. But the Seven of Swords comes up. It looks like it's a negative card, like it has a negative connotation for most people. When they pull it, they go, oh, what's that? That doesn't look good. And they say it like that, too. That doesn't look good. And, you know, it is on the surface, it's the energy of where, you know, we're having something that's being taken from us. And the person on it with the swords, they're taking away our things, our swords. Like, those are my swords. Give them back. It's like, no, I'm taking them. That's the face value of it, and that's like a negative connotation. On the good side of it, on the good side, there. It's like you switch roles. It's like it's not someone who's taking something from you. It's you taking something back. It's you who's taking those swords back. And, you know, it's like the swords, they represent the mind, a mindset, communication, you know, and an identity, right? It's like there's one reading that comes to mind where a person was coming back into their health after a setback, after a stroke of some kind, and so it was representative of them taking back this identity of them that they used to have of themselves. And you know, coming back into a healthy identity, you know, again, something that they had of themselves before their stroke. And, you know, I feel that with this card, it's like, you know, coming back into an identity, a mindset that we had of ourselves before we started compromising bits and pieces away, you know, just to cope, just, you know, with you know, it's usually loved ones who ask things of us that, you know, we end up bartering away. And if we lose too much of ourself because we want to please others, because the circumstances just ask that we set aside our dreams for a little bit while we're just working to sustain ourselves, then it's like it has its consequences when we do that, if we do too much of it, you know, to where we like need to like say, oh God, you know, I really need to like come back into this way of seeing myself, because this was a source of empowerment for me, and I need to do this for myself, you know. In the card, it's like the stealth of taking back these swords is happening in the dead of night, and sometimes it's like we look to, you know, bring this identity back without heralding it, without, you know, telling family and friends and loved ones, like, hey everyone, guess what I'm doing, I'm like, you know, going back into a previous identity so that, you know, I can empower myself, when they're usually the ones who kind of helped get us out of that identity. You know, it's like more like, you know, I'm just going to do this for myself, and, you know, I'm not going to like just tell everyone. I'm not going to post it on Facebook. Ten of Swords, that is like probably one of the worst cards to look at, as far as the bad of it is that, you know, one is dead. There you go. One has been stabbed in the back 10 times, sorry. 10 swords in the back. One is just lying in a stuck position there on the ground. And, you know, again, the swords representing a mind, communication, identity. It's like, you know, are we currently, do we have a mindset that keeps us stuck? You know, are we, you know, wanting to move forward in an area that seems like we're immovable? Do we have any kind of say in it? And, you know, sometimes this card comes up because we need to change our approach. We need to look at something from a different angle. We need to not be so rigid about how we're thinking about something. And so, you know, on the positive of it, I see it as a card of being flexible, of opening up, of seeing another way, or being open to another way, so that, again, we don't get stuck. All right, I'm going to change it up just a little bit. There's a few more minutes here of this, and there's a few other cards here. And again, what I like about these cards is they just kind of have a different viewpoint. It's like if we were to go through the entire deck, it's like we'd have some you know, variations on the same theme. The I guess the Fool card is the same as the Initiate in the Wizard's Tarot. The Initiate is the student who is at the beginning. The Fool is the person who is at the beginning of the new adventure. And the Initiate is the student who looks to become, who looks to graduate, who looks to have knowledge instilled and to have experiences that they can draw from, and at the end of the process to graduate to a higher level. And the Fool is cut of that same cloth. I think in a very general way, it's like looking at our own ability to take a leap of faith within ourselves, because both, they have no idea what's before them as far as the hard details. It's like as a student, you haven't gone to all the classes yet. You don't know all the information. You don't know how you're going to change once this information starts to settle within you, how one will be integrated. I think of myself taking philosophy in high school. And, one can look at an outline and says, oh, okay, well, we're going to study Socrates and then Plato and Aristotle and then Kierkegaard and then Sartre and then Nietzsche. And, it's like you can look at the syllabus and the framework of it and say, okay, I know exactly what we're going to do. And then, as you're going through it and then processing all of these philosophies, these thoughts, it's like, how does one know how they're going to integrate something before they do it? But one, moves forward, right? One trusts the process. That's something that you're drawn to, and you're going to go for it. That's the Initiate or the Fool. And I believe the good aspects of it, the bad aspects, in the Rider-Waite, the Fool is there on a cliff, right? And it's like, it's like it looks like the little dog is trying to warn him and say, hey, look before you leap. It's like, some things are worthy of investigating. It's like you don't fly a plane by sitting behind the control panel and take off. It's like you have to learn how to do certain things, before you do them, before you attempt them on a professional level. It's like even with reading Tarot, it's like, yeah, it's like you could go out and buy a deck. You could get a book and you could sit down with yourself or your friends and do it that way. Where you're reading from the little instruction booklet saying, oh, this means this and this means that. That's a way to do it. I think that's how, I originally started doing it that way. But I didn't, then say, oh, okay, that's all there is to it. I'm going to go get a job doing this. That didn't come until about two or three sessions later. No, it's actually much, much later than that. But it's like, like jumping in too quick. That's kind of where the bad aspect or the the negative aspect, you know, where you're just blind. It's like, you know, some people do need to open up their eyes as to, you know, human nature sometimes. You know, it's like a relationship that, you know, one wants to just jump into head first, feet first, head first. It's like, are you seeing, are you just being, you know, blind to it? Are there aspects that, you know, red flags that are being waved in front of your face and you're just being blind to it? All right, one more. The Hierophant, it's a card of the spiritual leader. And, you know, it's, there's wonderful energy around marriage and connectiveness and being, you know, socially, you know, a part of something larger, a group, and, you know, having that, you know, being connected to a larger society as a whole. I've seen negative aspects with it too, where, you know, it's like, sometimes being part of a group where that has, influence on someone, like, and a spiritual leader that looks to use their authority to make you, you know, do things that are not in sync with your own spirit, and yet, you know, there's like the pressure of the group and all, you know, to kind of hold you in place, and, you know, not all groups are good, not all groups are bad, and, you know, there's something to be said about the goal of the group as opposed to the particular leader of the group. If there's a leader that is, you know, charismatic, that has it going, that knows how to, you know, just respond to everything, you know, that's something. But it is, do you find that your allegiance is towards the higher goal that everyone is supposedly espousing, or is it towards that person? You know, if you were to take that person out of the equation and put someone else in, would you still be as connected to that goal? So it's something, you know, to look at, especially within the scope of society and how we take things like spirituality and make it a group function, how we make it a something to formulate, you know, or you know, make it a society thing where it's because the group starts to have its rules, and, you know, it becomes more about servicing the established part of it, the establishment, the established part of it, than the ideal that the group formed around in the first place. So something to consider about with that card. All right, I have to run to class in Moore Park at the Vortex. I teach every Thursdays and Mondays at the Vortex in Moore Park. Meditation and Tarot. Tonight is Tarot. Tarot Thursdays, meditation Mondays. All right. My website, Jason D. McKean, JasonDMckean.com. My Tarot reading schedule is up there under Tarot, weirdly enough. And my Om chant CDs are played everywhere in the world. Yoga studios, meditation halls, birthing centers, hospices, health spas, health clubs, and meditation groups everywhere. All right. Thank you for listening to Wizard Talk. I will be back next week, and many blessings.